Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
This is Barry Katz, and you're listening to Worthy Story.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
You guys, welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the world famous improv on Melrose Avenue. Woo!
I have to thank you guys, really, each and every one of you, for coming out tonight, because it really makes us extremely happy that we have fans and you're our audience. And so we're coming live. We get emails. People say they want to see us live. So we're here, and you came, and we really appreciate it.
Yes,
so thank
in
you.
LA. As you always say, you invite 100 people, two people come.
Right. Right. Well, that's just it. When you grew up in the Midwest, if you have a party and invite 20 people, 80 people come.
Yeah.
In L.A., you invite 80, you get...
two. And usually it's somebody who makes money off you, like a manager or an agent or something.
So this is great.
And they come in, they make an appearance, and then they leave.
That's right. Yeah. No, but we do want to thank you guys again for coming out tonight, and we have a fantastic guest. His name is Barry Katz.
Barry Katz?
Guy?
What?
Yes. Hollywood manager Barry Katz is here with us tonight. And as most of you know, he's from Boston. Did you know that?
Boston.
And in lieu of Barry being from Boston, we brought a very exciting treat for all of you. And that is the one and only Dunkin' Donuts,
ladies and gentlemen. Direct from Boston.
So pass them back.
Oh, here.
There's two boxes.
Take someone, pass them along.
Who's from Boston by a round of applause?
Yes.
They're the loudest people in the room. Who knew? The manager of the Dunkin' Donuts Hollywood is here. Johnny Hoops, thanks for coming
out. That's right. Hey, by the way, God bless the Green Bay Packers. Patriots suck. Okay. Oh, see, why do I turn the audience against me? Why?
Tonight, this is honestly maybe our 350th show of Storyworthy. I'm not kidding. Yeah, and this show is being podcasted. It'll be up on February 29th. It's a leap year.
Wow. So does that mean you listen on the 29th and you can't listen to it again for 4 years?
That's exactly right.
It will not reappear for another
exactly
4 years. Oh, my.
This is the first time that it's ever happened that we don't know what the guest is going to talk about.
Yes, yes. Usually we get the topic of their story, and that becomes the topic of our show.
Right.
Christine was, she was worried. She was like, we don't have, and I said, wait a minute. We've done 350 shows, and we've known every single time. We're batting 1,000.
Right.
So we're now batting 999. So we're definitely going to the Hall of Fame.
So
it's
since
fine.
We don't know what Barry's going to talk about, we're going to talk about our own thing. And what I wanted to talk about was this club.
This particular room, in
this
fact.
This room, actually. The Hollywood Improv Lab. You guys, this room has gone through many changes over the years. And 18 years ago, I used to teach traffic school right here.
Wow.
It's true. I taught traffic school for 2 years.
And none of this stuff was here. There were no elegant white chairs at the bar. There was no table service. There were no little chandeliers.
There was no drinking during class.
Well, not that you knew of.
Yeah.
Go on break, people come back and I don't know why I'm even here. Why do I have to go to traffic school?
But here's what I would do in traffic school, you guys. I would spend the first 3 hours just doing crowd work. So I would just say, hey, you know, where are you from?
Yeah,
what'd
she just took advantage of the fact that people were trapped in a room and couldn't leave to try out material.
Absolutely. So I would literally, you guys, I would go through my one-woman show. And I had like a tape deck, like a cassette deck, or maybe it was CDs, but I had like a boom box. And I would say, all right, you guys, you want to hear about red light tickets or you want to hear about my life? And then they would say, well, you're more interesting.
They'd hear about your life. And then they'd go, could we talk more about how far you have to be in a freeway to – no, and she used to get comedians she knew, including yours truly, to come and do time.
Right.
At these
So the first 3 hours, I would just do crowd work. And then I would do 1 hour of booking other comedians to come into my traffic school and do time.
This is why people still die on the freeways of Los Angeles. because everybody who teaches traffic school is bullshitting the whole time.
Yeah,
taking
but
advantage.
Listen, like Jackie Cation would come in, Maria Bamford, and they would do 20 minutes of time clean. You know, it had to be clean.
But I want you to think, okay,
the daytime.
But, right, now this room is like, okay, it wasn't a stage then, but at least it was a room at the Improv. So maybe people were thinking, well, maybe this isn't that strange. But you would also teach traffic school at various locations, like at a chiropractic school in Glendale, which would literally be two rooms in a horrifying, murder-ridden two-story building.
Yeah.
So it would be sitting there. There'd be like an anatomy chart on the wall.
There were a lot
it's
of 2 those
o'clock
skeletons.
In the afternoon. Yeah, skeletons and things. And we're like, hey, so I tell you, my mom, boy, she ignored me a lot. And it's like people are like, why are we, what is going on? Doing comedy in a brightly lit small classroom is possibly the worst possible way to do comedy.
But I would tell the people in traffic school, because they obviously, every one of them, when I said, you know, what did you do? What was your violation? And they would say that they were speeding or that they rolled through the stop sign. And they would say, everybody does it. Everybody does it. I was keeping up with traffic. Everybody does it. And I would say, actually, you guys, how many of you have been to traffic school before? And it was always like 80 to 90% of the people would raise their hand.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know what? Not everybody's doing it. Just you guys, and you keep coming back.
Yeah, and you have so many points that's worth going to traffic school.
Right.
Because I once in my career in driving in Los Angeles did I have to go to traffic school. Did I actually have enough points to make it worthwhile? In which case, I think you falsified a document for me.
I never falsified a document. Okay, one casting director. But the thing is, I had a call back, and she met me at the Ralphs behind Paramount. One time, you guys.
That's
one
the
time.
Most seemly thing that's ever happened between a casting director and an actor in the Ralphs behind Paramount. Usually it's a hand job. So this was really, really very above board considering what usually goes on near the dumpster.
All right, you guys. So here's what else is happening tonight. We're playing Shotgun Storyworthy. Shotgun Storyworthy.
Shotgun Storyworthy. Crowd
it's right
goes
there.
Wild. Crowd goes wild. We need to buy an applause sign.
And tonight, you guys, somebody's winning $50.
$50. You see right there, look at that. That's a $50 bill.
Who is sponsoring this show?
You can only see a quarter of it, but I swear to you, the rest of the bill is there. Who is sponsoring the show? You are, Christine
Blackburn.
Christine Blackburn,
sponsoring
Inc.
the Storyworthy podcast. And here's the thing. Here's how much I believe in Shotgun Storyworthy, you guys. That wheel, I got it from Riverside Promo Wheels, and it was $700. I think it was $680 to be exact. And I didn't have $680, so I sold my gold. I sold all my gold jewelry because I said, I need a game show more than I need jewelry.
That's right. Riverside Promo Wheels is the second highest grossing Riverside County business. The first one, of course, meth. Why am I so mean?
Anyway,
but if you've
ever
been to Riverside, it's just Breaking Bad.
So
with less interesting mountains.
Barry's coming on. He's going to tell a story. Then we're going to chat. And then we're going to play Shotgun Storyworthy. So if you haven't already, you can fill your name out on the little slips of paper that are about the tables. Put your name on that little slip of paper and put it in the Storyworthy bag of truth.
The bag of truth, ladies and gentlemen.
And then we will draw the names out. You spin the wheel. You tell a one-minute story. You hope you don't get shot. And Barry
right.
Katz is going to
judge
you.
If you go over a minute, shotgun.
That's right.
And not, you know, some people say it's in poor taste, and we say, we don't care.
Anyway, so that's all happening tonight. So without further ado, Hannes,
yes.
I do want to mention to the folks that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast outside of coming and seeing us live.
Yes, which, those of you at home listening to this.
You can do that by following us on Twitter, @Storyworthy, and of course on Instagram, @Storyworthy. And do we still care about the Facebook page? Do we care?
I care, but I'm 100, you know. So,
Facebook is tricky. It's really tricky.
You might as well look at Facebook or just tell your friends you like us. Just put up a post on anything and say, hey, Storyworthy is neat. That's all we need.
That's true. That's true. Because
we
if you
also
tell
need millions of dollars. But other than that, all we need is some good press.
Hey, here's something right here. You know, we have a mailing list.
What?
We have a mailing list.
An emailing list.
And you can join our mailing list and you'll get a letter from me every Monday morning. I know. Calm down.
Yeah, to relax.
It's a lot
people.
Of fun, but you can do that. Go over to storyworthypodcast.com. I also want to thank, by the way, the people that are working for us here tonight.
Yes,
Antonio
here for your crew.
Antonio, thank you for everything.
Has worked at the Improv for 800 years, ladies and gentlemen.
And Dax Jordan, he's on sound. Thanks for making us sound good back there, Dax.
Dax, he's giving the devil fingers, and he's going back and forth.
and our bartender tonight, and I'm going to get your name wrong. So tell me again. Ashoka.
Ashoka,
is our
ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
What I'm glad is when there's somebody in the room who has an even less pronounceable name than me, it makes me very happy. That's what I like.
Hannes is just pissed because they didn't have those little license plates when he was growing up.
I know.
That said Hannes. He's still mad about that.
I'm still mad about that. Remember the Simpsons where he wants a Bart license plate and all they have is Bort? That was me.
So what'd they have? Hannes?
They didn't have nothing. They had John.
Hummus?
That was not Hannes, Hummus, Honus, Hannes. People are like, oh, are you related to Hanes Underwear? It's like, yeah, I'd be doing this job if I were heir to the Hanes Underwear fortune.
I want to tell you something. Just because you brought that up, if I ever see a guy, or let's just say I'm with a man, and he has on Hanes Underwear, and it's just missing the one N,
yes,
I'm done. Like, I can't go further.
Oh, I can beat that story. Okay, a fellow I know at work happens to be gay. Said, hey, once I was with another guy who happens to be gay here at work, and they both knew me, and one guy took his pants off, he's wearing Hanes Underwear, and they both completely collapsed into laughter. And it was like, I don't know, I didn't want to tell you the story because I thought it might offend you, and I'm like, hey, if somebody's having sex and shouting my name, I'm happy. I don't have to be there. I just want my name shouted out during someone's orgasm. So it's good enough for me.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much again for coming. And so now, without further ado, we're going to bring on our guest. And let me give you his bio here.
Oh, this bio is amazing, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we have on a lot of amazing guests. And Barry is no different for sure. Barry Katz is a Hollywood manager. And he's also known for helping launch the careers of some of the most groundbreaking comedy artists in the business, including Dave Chappelle, Dane Cook, Tracy Morgan, Nick DiPaolo, Whitney Cummings, Jay Moore, and Louis C.K.
Oh, my goodness.
Barry has produced multiple comedy albums that have gone gold, platinum, and double platinum, as well as produced several films. And he has executive produced over 30 different stand-up specials, including 7 seasons of Last Comic Standing. Have you heard of that show?
I've heard of that show.
Yeah.
I've heard it's a thing.
It's on the NBC.
It's a thing with the comedy, and it's on network television.
Yes.
Oh, I see. It's on network. Okay, that's why I was confused.
And here's something interesting. As I said, Barry's from Boston, but you will not detect an accent. Now, there's a Boston person right there. He doesn't say it like that.
What, are you embarrassed, huh?
We're going to ask him. Barry has a very popular podcast right now called Industry Standard on iTunes. And if you happen to be in this town and you are a talent and you are not listening to this show, you are doing yourself a disservice. It's really an amazing show where he interviews mostly people on the other side of the business, network presidents, studio executives, etc. And everybody in Hollywood should be listening to this show, Industry Standard. You can find it on iTunes, and you can find Barry on Twitter at Barry Katz, K-A-T-Z. All right, you guys, put your hands together for the one and only Barry Katz. Woo-hoo!
Thank you for having me as your 350th guest.
Woohoo!
I'm glad I made the cut. You know, before I start, I want to say an underwear story, because you said an underwear story.
Please.
It's very, very quick.
Yes.
The first time I met Marcy Klein, the executive producer of Saturday Night Live and so many other different shows, I asked her about what it was like to be the daughter of Calvin Klein. And she said, well, it has its disadvantages. I said, what's the disadvantage? She said, every time I take a guy home and he takes off his pants, I have to see my father's name. But I'm very, by the way, thank you so much for having me. I really am honored to be here, and I know that's a shock to you, Hannes, but I really am. I really am. It means a lot when I get these kind of invitations, because I started my podcast I just wanted to give something back, because a lot of artists, you know, when you manage artists, you can do great things with them, and it's an amazing feeling as a manager when you can help an artist and you can, with your talent and their talent, help them get to where they want to go. And it's just an incredible feeling. But at the end of the day, when you get home afterwards and they're celebrating, you're celebrating, you realize that you've only helped that one person. And it's an exciting thing helping one person make their dreams come true. It's really so amazing. But you're only helping one person. And granted, if you get somebody on Saturday Night Live, yes, they're inspiring millions of people. But in the end, you're really only helping one person get to where they want to go. And so when I started the podcast in my spare time, and I have to do it in the mornings or at noon or at night, and we edit on Sundays, you really, it's you know, because you start at 0-0. Everybody here who's listening on the podcast, who's here live, whatever you've tried to do in your life, you start something and nothing is happening before you started. And when I started the podcast, everyone I knew told me not to do it because, you know, as a manager, you're not supposed to be doing things that are, how should you say it, not necessarily in line with management. But in my mind, I was creating relationships. I was fostering relationships. And it's all worked out. And I'm humbled to know how many people have listened and how many people continue to listen because I did it to help people. And if you do get a chance to listen, you'll notice why. But I have I'm supposed to tell one story, but I'm going to tell two stories tonight. Because I never, if you know my podcast, you know I never know what I'm going to say until I look into the eyes of the people here. And normally I started in comedy. I started as a stand-up comedian. But I think I'm going to tell a couple of stories that are not necessarily comedic. The first story I want to tell is something that to let you know that anything that happens to you in your life that's bad, and I've had a lot of things happen to me that's bad, it's well documented. I've been fired by many, many artists, and I've been hired by many artists. And I've had a lot of personal things happen to me that have been difficult, like all of you have. And one of the things that is interesting about our lives is that when we're younger, our parents try to shelter us from all the things that are negative or that are bad that happen. They don't really prepare us for what's going to happen. They try to make everything right for us. And my message in this first story is the fact that when bad things happen to you, there's a reason for it. You don't know why, but there's a reason. So the first story I'm going to tell is a story that was one of the most difficult times in my life. My one of my dogs was killed by a coyote in my yard. And I have two boys, 10 and 11. And I was teaching a comedy class for them the next day that, you know, that I do every year for them. And I couldn't tell them. And so I held it inside. I had this anxiety inside that many of you felt in your personal life and your professional life, but I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't want to tell them, so I held it in after the comedy class, and then I had to wait till the next day, and I met them at a park, and I knew I was going to tell them, and it was really, really difficult to figure out what I was going to say and how I was going to say it. And so when I met with them in the park, I told them that their dog was killed by a coyote, and I... What's the weird and odd thing is that my mom had passed away about 6 months earlier, and I hadn't cried yet. You know, sometimes you just don't experience that feeling of how you're going to release something that you need to get released, but you don't know when or how. And it just never came out until I started telling my sons, and I started crying, like hyperventilating, crying in front of them. And my sons turned into a parent. And they hugged me and they said, "Daddy, don't cry. It's not your fault. You didn't do it. Don't be sad. Please don't cry, Daddy. It's okay. It's okay, Daddy." And they turned into the parent, as I said. And then I thought to myself, how am I going to show them how bad things happen and then they turn into good things? And I hugged them and I said, I want to tell you a story that you know part of. I said, when your dad was 26 years old, he was married to a girl who was 23, and unfortunately, she passed away. And at that point in time that she died, your dad spent a lot of time in bed. He didn't know what to do. He just was depressed all the time. And he couldn't imagine how it was possible that the world would take away a person who was 23 years old. And at the time, just like you both, you don't understand why the world took away your dog. And at the time, I didn't understand why one day I was talking to somebody, I was holding somebody, I was telling somebody I loved them, and the next day they were gone. And as I hugged them tighter, I said, but the reality is at the point when that happened, I didn't understand what the reason was. None of you who are listening or are here live understand what the reason is, why you're fired from your job or why some best friend that you have all of a sudden cuts you off and you don't know why, or there's something else that happens in your life that you just can't figure out what it is or how you're going to respond to it because it doesn't make any sense. And I said to my sons, I said, listen, if my first wife hadn't passed away, I wouldn't be sitting here right now looking into the eyes of my children. And the world has a strange way of working. And on that particular day, the world took my first wife, but there was a master plan, something that I didn't realize. And the plan was is that eventually I was going to meet somebody else, and I was going to have you guys, and you were going to bring joy into my life. And so for all you out there listening, the point of this first message is whatever adversity you're going through or whatever things that have happened in your life that have taken your knees out from under you, just know that there's a reason for it and there's something positive that's going to come forward. And I can guarantee you that because it happened to me. So that's my first story. And my second story has to do with adversity too, but it has to do with a positive side of adversity that'll probably lighten things up a little bit as you guys are probably in a coma right now. I got the pleasure of hanging out with an amazing man a couple of days ago, Irvin Magic Johnson. And Magic, as you know, was diagnosed with HIV about 20, 25 years ago. And when I talked to him, it was an incredible time I had with him. And he spoke to a group of people that sponsor my podcast. And he had a message that I loved. And I'm going to share that message with all of you. For your personal lives and your business lives, his message was really simple. Two words. Over-deliver. And if you over-deliver in your lives and in your business life and your personal life, his message was you'll always succeed. And he told these amazing stories, and I'll share a few of them with you. Just the trajectory of his life and how he over-delivered. When he was in high school, he was a prodigy, but before high school, he was really, really good, and he was poised to go to the number one high school in East Lansing, Michigan. Unfortunately, court-ordered busing happened, and he was forced to go to a white school that was the worst basketball team in Michigan. And he said to himself, I have to over-deliver. I have to figure out how to take this team and win a state championship. And within the next 3 to 4 years, he worked with this team. He had a work ethic. He did what he had to do. And they won the state championship for the first time in the history of the school. And then he decided he wanted to go to college. And all the coaches came calling. Mike Krzyzewski from Duke, Roy Williams, John Calipari. But he decided he wanted to stay home, close to his mom and her favorite chicken dish. And so he went to Michigan State, a program that hadn't won a national championship in God knows when. And every year they got a little bit closer, but they lost. And in his final year at the school, they went to the championship game against a blonde white guy from Indiana State named Larry Bird. And their team was 33-0. And Magic found the will to win the national championship for Michigan State. And then he told the story of how he was drafted by the Lakers and how he came in as a rookie and he was always a leader. And he thought when he got there, how am I going to lead? I've got Kareem, I've got Worthy, I've got all these amazing players. How am I ever going to lead these people? I mean, they'll look at me like I'm crazy. And he thought to himself, how do I over-deliver without stepping on any toes? So he got the practice schedule, and it said show up at 10 o'clock every day the first week. But he decided that he was going to show up at 7 a.m. every day and work hard for those 3 hours before the practice. Because in his mind, he'd played against Larry Bird, and he hated playing against Larry Bird. Because Larry Bird was the only player that he knew that worked as hard as he did, had the work ethic that he had. If you know anything about Larry Bird, after every practice, every game, he would go back on the court, and he had a little game he played with himself. The game was, I get to go home when I make 100 free throws in a row. If I clang number 99, I don't get to go home. And Magic knew that about Larry. And so when he got to the pros, he knew he was going to have to be the best he could be. So showing up at 7 a.m. was the only way he knew how to do it. After 3 days, the coaches gathered all the players around, including Kareem, and said, you know, guys, Magic is showing up at 7 a.m. every day. You guys are showing up at 10. Well, that's what it says on the schedule. We're supposed to show up at 10. Yeah, but from now on, we're going to have all of you show up at 7. And they all hated Magic at that point. But he realized that he had to change the culture because the Lakers hadn't won in over a decade. And that year, because of his work ethic and his will and over-delivering, they got to the finals against Moses Malone in Philadelphia. And they were about to fly to the fifth game where they were ahead 3-2 in Philadelphia, which was a brutal place to play. And as Magic tells it, Kareem, they found out, had sprained his ankle and he couldn't play. And he was the greatest player in the world. And they had to play against Moses Malone, one of the greatest centers. All the players were dejected. Fate had shined upon them negatively. They were never going to win without Kareem. Magic thought to himself, what can I do? What can I do to get these people up and figuring out that they can do it? So he got up early and went to the private jet flying to Philadelphia. And he decided he was getting on first and he would sit in Kareem's seat. And as all the players came on, he said to everybody, hey, I'm in the chair now. I'm in Kareem's seat. You can ride my coattails. We're going to win this championship. And lighten them all up. They were laughing. And Magic stood in for Kareem at center, even though he was 6'9". And that night in Philadelphia, he scored 42 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists, and they won the world championship. He over-delivered. And the message that he said was just so incredible about that, about how he always goes forward and does the extra thing to take things to the next level. And I think to myself a lot of times, and I think about Christine, and I think about Hannes, and you don't understand what it takes to put together a show like this, because like them, I started at zero, and their audience is now massive and huge, and people love them because they over-delivered. And that's my story.
This is awesome.
Listen, do you love basketball?
I do like basketball the last 2 minutes.
Oh, really?
I know. Everybody likes basketball the last 2 minutes.
No, but you really don't think it actually comes down to that, do you? I mean, I know that's a kind of a cliche thing to say. You're kidding, right?
No, I like the last 2 minutes. But I will tell you this. I have no idea how you sit in that chair with that dress.
I know, right? Well, I have to do is I cross my legs tightly.
These people in the first row can tell what religion you
and
are.
And then under...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a man.
I'm sorry.
Well, the dress is failing if he thinks you're a man.
Yeah,
yes,
really?
Exactly.
Now, wait, listen, honestly, basketball is your game?
No, I love baseball. I'm a big Red Sox fan.
And, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had heroin tracks in my veins for many years. But
yeah, really.
But I've actually been, this is what's weird, I've actually been to every championship they've won. I've been in the crowd. I've flown there. I've gone there.
Wow.
For every
I actually have the seat that where they won after 86 years in St. Louis. They were tearing down the stadium, and I got the
you
seat.
Got the
how,
seat.
Did
the,
how did you make that happen?
You buy it.
No, but how? I want to know what does that look like?
Well, how do you make anything happen? That's the thing that's interesting, again, with your audience, and I know I'm a broken record, but you make anything happen that you want to make happen. I have the on-deck circle from the 2007 World Series with the cleat marks on it framed above my couch.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, that's
yes,
when the,
this
they
is
won
a good
the world
thing,
the second world championship.
I don't know. Yes. But what I'm saying, I want to know about that seat. So you call the stadium. You say, hey, folks, I hear you guys are going to be tearing down this stadium. I'd like to buy a 7F.
Yeah, I mean, you do anything. You think about anything.
They will sell the seats.
No, but it's just persistence. If I look out at anybody here, like a lot of people, everybody here has lost a job and then gotten a job.
Of course.
And the thing about it is that getting a new job is just persistence. It's like a lot of people are like, hey, did you get that new job? I emailed my resume out to 100 places. Well, did you call? Did you go there personally? No, I just emailed the stuff.
I get that.
It's like you have to really like hammer away at
but
people.
But I was just wondering that specifically. I mean, it seems very unique and specific to want a seat.
You can have anything you want if you fight for it.
All right. By the way, your story was great and made me feel very guilty about the nap I took this afternoon. I was like, I should be well.
As long as you're not taking a nap now, that's the important
thing.
Oh,
I am. I'm sleepwalking. It's the only way I can perform on stage.
How long? Can I just ask you a question? How long have you been growing the beard?
The beard, this is the longest I've ever had my beard. I got married recently. Thank you. Cheap applause, please. Thank you.
It only took him 7 years. I don't know.
And
that was
she was like, you know, you should grow it a little longer. And that's when I realized I am no longer in charge of my own face. So this beard is probably 7 months, but it's been trimmed. If I had not had it trimmed, it would be down to here.
But sometimes I look over and he's combing it.
No, I have to. Yeah, I haven't had a comb for my head in like 20 years. But I had to buy tiny combs for my beard, which I forgot today, so I'm feeling very self-conscious.
Is that
about.
So you can, you know, take out like
it
the food
just
particles?
Goes, well, first of all, every once in a while, only, by the way, only another guy with a beard will tell you when you've got a piece of egg on your face. Everybody pretends it doesn't happen, and sometimes they're like, dude. And you're like, oh, see, this is why you need the comb, to just make sure things don't stick in your face.
I've never, you know, I know you got to ask me a question, but I've never actually, it's shocking to me that a woman would say to a man she's romantically entangled with, could you grow that beard longer?
Well, the longer the beard grows, the softer it gets. This is all I'm saying, Barry.
Okay, I got it.
You understand what I'm saying, Barry?
That must explain. That
I'm
must
saying
explain
you can
my...
have anything you want.
That must
and she wants it softer.
That must explain why I don't have anything I want. Okay.
Listen, Barry Katz, there's so many things I want to ask you about, and
please.
I don't mean to bring it downtown, but
downtown.
You brought up death. Your dad passed away when you were 4 years old.
That's right.
What happened there?
That was, it's weird. You know, it's weird when you come here. Like, the reason why I told those stories, it's so odd, but because I normally don't tell the depressing stories, but I just got, I normally look around, and I feel things, I don't know, and I felt that, not that you guys are down.
It's a room full of people from Boston, so they're all like...
Not that you guys are down, but I felt that there was something inside all of you that you were feeling these feelings at some point in the last year, so... maybe I'm wrong. So my dad had Hodgkin's disease, and he was 37, and he passed away, and it was, you know, when you're 4 years old, this is how I think I became a manager, is because when I was four, after my dad passed away, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd hear these sounds. I didn't know what they were, and I don't know if you remember these things or in your life, but I remember them. So I'd kind of come around the side where the kitchen was, and I'd see my mom doing the dishes overlooking the yard. And you know when you see somebody from behind and their shoulders are shaking, and you know they're crying. And at 4 years old, I would, you know, grab my mom's leg, and I'd say, "Everything's going to be okay, Mom." And I think I became the everything's going to be okay guy. And as a manager, it's very important, and a producer, to be an everything's going to be okay guy, because shit goes wrong all the time. It doesn't matter what level you are. If you don't believe that Johnny Depp is in his mansion lying on a couch saying, "What the fuck happened? How do I get back to where I was?" or insert name here, that's the way it is. It's how many artists in our world have successes all the way up? Maybe Will Smith, but even he has some setbacks.
Yeah.
Everybody has them. Adam Sandler, I was with Adam Sandler, as Jeffrey Ross would say, I drop more names than Oscar Schindler. I'm sorry. but like Adam, I went to the premiere of one of his last movies, and he was just shaking his head saying, you know, I don't know what happened to the last one. It's just, I tried so hard. I worked so hard. Hundreds of people worked on it. We all thought it was great.
When they went to Hawaii and switched wives.
Yeah. And so you don't know.
I saw that on a plane. Actually, I didn't think it was that bad at all.
But you know,
it was Drew Barrymore, Wendy McClendon Covey.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that every artist is, they want things to go well, but, right.
And it's always down to Sean Connery. I remember famously, Sean Connery was unbelievable. He's James Bond. He was fantastic. In the 80s, there was a long time where he was making some just crap and not getting offered anything good.
Yeah,
and like, he aged into being older Sean Connery and was able to turn around, like starting Red October and that kind of stuff.
And that's what happens with great talent, because talent rules.
It always
rules.
Comes back. Yeah.
Look, Michael Caine did Jaws 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Jaws 4. If you watch that movie, he got out of the water in the movie up the stairs to the boat, and his clothes were dry.
Yeah.
Okay. But some gigs you do for the money, and some gigs you do for the respect.
He very famously said that particularly. He said, the movie is terrible, but the house it bought is still fantastic.
Yeah, good for him,
man. And that was
his
quote for Jaws 4. Yeah, he literally missed when he won his first Oscar. He wasn't there because he was on set for Jaws 4. And it was like, you never know. You know, what are you supposed to be like? Oh, I'm going to win an Oscar. I'm not going to do this job. You can't think like that.
So let me ask you something. You seem very comfortable doing industry standard.
I love it because, you know, I get so much. You know, I share this with you, which is probably embarrassing. There's a rabbi in Malibu who I take.
A rabbi in Malibu?
I go to. It's Malibu Chabad. It's up on a house on a hill. It's his own private house, and he has a little congregation. And I encourage
Mel Gibson.
No,
and I no. This is the one person who doesn't.
He has a church in Malibu. No, but he has
a church in Malibu.
Well, anyway,
he has a synagogue in Malibu. The apocalypse is nigh. But
and I encourage him to do his podcast. When I talk to him, it's a long way to go, but it'll be worth it. I said to him, "How many people are in your congregation after 20 years?" And he said, "About 300. And I said, do you realize that you could start your own podcast and in one day you'll have more than 300? He said, I know, but I'm trying to make an impact one person at a time. So I'm encouraging him to do this. But what he said to me about the podcast, because I said to him, I said, I love the podcast because I get to give back. Mm-hmm. And he said, Barry, you're not the only one giving. I said, well, yeah, I mean, I am. I'm taking my spare time and I'm giving. No, Barry, you're not the only one giving. I said, I don't understand what you mean, Rabbi. He said, Barry, everyone who gives cannot give unless there's somebody willing to receive. And so everybody who listens to your podcast, to my podcast, or any podcast, is giving back to us. And that's what I love about the podcast most is that they listen and they give back.
And personal relationships are a lot like business relationships, because when it ends, it's because you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this, crazy as it sounds, being a manager is turning no's into yes's. That's all it is. You get the call from somebody that you find out something's happening, you pitch your artist for it, and they say no. And you got to keep fighting over and over and over again until they say yes. In personal relationships, what's really fascinating, and all of you know this because you've all ended a personal relationship or had one end on you. If you're the one who ended it, you have to go home and say to yourself, you can turn a no into a yes if you really want to. But you don't. Why don't you? Because something's broken and you don't want to fix it. But as a manager, when something's broken, your job is to fix it. And it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. You have to make it happen because that's what the artist wants.
And so what happens when you have to give somebody bad news? And do you have a process in order to build up to that?
I try to stay really positive with the bad news. And I actually, believe it or not, I know this sounds crazy, I love giving bad news as much as I love giving good news. Because to me, as I told in the story, bad news leads to great things. I'm going to tell you a quick little story that'll blow you away. Jordan Peele from Key and Peele. These two guys have a very successful show. It's been on for like 7 years. A lot of people don't know this, but Jordan Peele was a cast member on Mad TV. Mad TV was a show that was getting canceled. And they had given the show, I think, 4 more episodes to air. And the executive producer and owner of the show, David Saltzman, who's a really great producer and a really powerful man in the business, he was depressed, but he was, you know, with 4 shows left, this is what we're doing. Jordan Peele, in the meantime, during the summer, auditions for Saturday Night Live. And then he tests for Saturday Night Live. And then he gets Saturday Night Live. And he gets the call and he's so excited he's got Saturday Night Live. And so now he's going to make the call to David Saltzman that he hopes will be excited for him. Hey, David, I got Saturday Night Live. It's unbelievable. Thank you for all the time that you've put in, you've given me. I know we only have 4 shows left, but can I get out of these 4 shows so I can start on Saturday Night Live? And David Saltzman said, absolutely not. You cannot. And Jordan Peele lost Saturday Night Live. And as a manager, you have to deliver that news. But based on my stories early on, the fact is you don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
But great things are going to happen to you when bad things happen. And for Jordan Peele, he should send Lorne Michaels a fruit basket for believing in him. And he should send David Saltzman a bigger fruit basket for denying him the opportunity to go to SNL, because he created his own show. He's the executive producer. He's the writer. He's the star. And he's a much bigger star now than probably he would have been in being an ensemble at Saturday Night Live.
That is a good story. Let me ask you something. As a manager, do you have
I love the fact that you start with every question. Let me ask you something.
Do you have a manager?
Do I have a manager?
Yeah.
Yes, Hannes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, that
now,
would explain your presence here tonight.
Do managers
really
have managers?
You need to change your management.
I've never known a manager to have a manager, but I could use something.
Okay, listen,
they're giving me the light.
No, we're not giving you a light. We're going to play some Shotgun Storyworthy in a second because, you know, these fine people here are ready to play this game show, and somebody's going to win $50. That's all I'm saying. So that's important. But before we bring those folks on, I wanted to ask you, here's what I want to ask
you. Now, do these people want to win $50?
Do they? I do. I'm gonna toss my own name.
Those of you,
she just wants to pay for the pizza right here.
I think what we learned tonight is that whoever doesn't win the $50 will find $100 on the way home. This is it's obviously don't tell a terrible, terrible story.
All right, listen.
So that you
we're
get
gonna
a car.
Play Shotgun in 2 seconds. But before that, I'm gonna read a list of comics,
is this,
and you
is this real?
And you tell me genius. And if you don't think they're a genius, then you just don't say anything. All right, here we go.
I have to say genius or non-genius.
Yeah, here we go. Richard Pryor.
Genius.
Of course. George Carlin.
Genius.
Bill Cosby.
Genius without the pills.
Robin Williams.
Genius.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Genius, but I will put a caveat to that. Because Jerry Seinfeld, I've known all my life, and he would say this, I think, if I were sitting next to him. You know, he's the guy who would say that he wasn't a genius from the moment he started. But through hard work and execution and constantly hammering away and reinventing and redoing his craft and forging forward, he became somebody who you would consider to be a genius. But he would agree that starting out, he wasn't Pryor or Carlin or somebody like that.
All right. How about Margaret Cho?
Margaret Cho. I love Margaret Cho. I would say this about Margaret Cho because I've interviewed her. I think that she is a genius in the sense of, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, not necessarily per se of all the material that she presents, because she does a whole bunch of different alternative and unique things, but in her world, in her niche that she's in, which she's created an amazing niche, I would say that she is a genius. But she would sit here and she would tell you, if you compare her to Pryor or Carlin at this point, she wouldn't say that she's at that category, I would think. And I can't speak for her. But she's created a niche that very few performers have ever created, and she has an audience that's powerful and strong.
Okay, how about Roseanne Barr?
Roseanne Barr, I would say, is not a genius, and I'll tell you why. Because I think in order to be a genius, in my opinion, you have to have certain qualities on both sides of the ball. And I feel that if you're a genius, you have to not only be great at your vision, but you also have to treat people like you want to be treated. And I think throughout her career, she had a difficult time balancing and figuring out how to treat people like she would want to be treated as a person. And I think that cost you in the end. And America never knows about people who are difficult most of the time. If I mention, I could mention five people right now that are really difficult, but you would never know it because their persona on stage is incredible. And so I would say that Roseanne, because of those things, I would take that away from her. But if she had been great to everybody that she ran into on the way up, I'd say that that would put her in a different category.
Well, she's not working, so that says something, right?
She didn't have to work.
Ain't you? Well, that's true, too. How about Norman Lear?
Oh, I interviewed Norman Lear, one of the greatest interviews I've ever had in my life. He is definitely a genius. This is a guy who had... He had five top 10 shows and five shows in the top nine. At many points in time, he had over 80 million people watching his shows at the same time.
Genius.
He's just a brilliant man. And just to tell you a little side note on Norman Lear.
Yeah.
And this goes to show you about decisions that you make in your life, whether you make a decision based on money or respect. He'd been trying to get All in the Family going for years. He'd been passed on by CBS twice, passed on by another entity. And then he finally got, I think, another network passed on him. And he finally worked hard to get a film deal because television was so hard. And so he got a film deal. He got a three-picture deal that was worth millions. And then right as he's about to sign the film deal, he gets the offer to do 13 episodes of All in the Family for CBS at a fraction of the money that the film deal was. And he didn't even hesitate. He took the deal where he felt he could deliver, and he knew he believed in himself, and if he could do that and get the chance, he'd make more than that money from the film deal.
That's
and he'd
awesome.
Be able to do as many films as he wanted to do.
All right, you guys. So here is the point in the show where we're going to start playing some shock.
All right, I'm going to read you the rules, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, no notes on stage. You spin the wheel. Do not touch the wheel again.
Yeah.
When the wheel stops, you look at the topic, you think about your story, and you say the name of the topic before you start talking. Watch the clock, which is right here. You are responsible for your own time. Sure, a story should not be over 1 minute long. If you go over 1 minute, you better be telling a really good story, and then you're gonna compensate. But you're probably gonna get shot. If you go over time, you will hear a gunshot. Ba boom, you've been hit, but it's not an automatic elimination. I mean, you're wounded. It's not a fatal shot. You're wounded. However,
that's
it is a factor
like.
In the judging,
yeah.
Okay? So you do the thing where you grab your shoulder like they used to do in old TV shows.
Sure.
Where like everybody was like, oh, it's fine. And the judges are looking at time, story, and the ability to stay on topic. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, our first contestant, you guys, this is exciting. Come on up to the stage, Eldon Rhodes. Eldon Rhodes, now I know for a fact this girl has played the game before. I know she has.
She has.
So she's going to know what to do. Say it with me.
Once it's, more it's a, with feeling.
The topic is California.
Are you ready?
So, California. I moved here about 3.5 years ago from the Washington, D.C. area. And as I was coming here, everybody was saying, oh, my God, California, there's earthquakes there. What are you going to do? And I was like, well, you know, I grew up in Florida. I'm used to having disasters, obviously. Florida itself is a disaster. But then, of course, you have hurricanes and things like that. And, you know, the good thing about hurricanes is you always have that warning, you know, evacuate, everything else. So I get here to California and, you know, everything is going okay. You know, I have my first earthquake, which was like, you know, just like, oh my God, yes, it was an earthquake. But then back in D.C., they had an earthquake. Okay. And so I said to my friends, I'm glad I moved to California to get away from the earthquakes.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
It's just that easy, ladies and gentlemen.
50.95
seconds. A 50-second story, and we know a little bit about Eldon. Look at Barry Katz making notes.
And like, it fits right in with our good coming from bad. It's all
right, you guys. Coming to the stage right now is the one and only Lance Simmons. Come on up.
Lance. Oh.
All right, you guys, say it with me. Here we go. Spin.
Ah, just a mighty spin.
This is like if Dudley Do-Right were a movie star. It's unbelievable.
Mom.
Ooh, interesting. Mom.
Mom. Mom.
We all have one of those.
Weird holy man. All right. And
all righty. We ready to roll? Oh, we're rolling. My mother. Oh, she was a great woman. She's gone, unfortunately. But before she left, she had many sage pieces of wisdom and advice to give me. And one of the things she gave me was back in 1976, I decided that I was going to get involved in a career in politics. And I had met Jimmy Carter. And I traveled around the world, around the country with Jimmy Carter to get him elected. My mother said to me in one of her more sober moments, she looked at me and she said, honey, you really want to do this politics thing? I said, yes, I do, Mom. It's really what I feel. And she said, you're much too honest for that. And I have spent the rest of my career in politics trying to be honest and with an enormous amount of integrity. Thanks, Mom.
Yay! That was a very nice story.
Very
see
nice
that?
57 seconds.
57 seconds in perfect time. Nobody's been shot. I like it. Barry, anything?
No one's been shot.
Yes.
All right, you guys. The next storyteller coming to the stage is the one and only Jay Neal.
Oh, my goodness. coming around this
now,
way.
Now, Jay Neal, I know for a fact, is a fan of Storyworthy.
Yes.
He has given us good reviews on iTunes, which is what you guys can do.
Yes, exactly. Let's hear
He's
for
given
good
us
reviews.
good comments.
Drove
here
from San Pedro to come to the show. Did any of you come from the South
He's already
Bay?
He's spinning the wheel.
He's spinning the wheel.
We have regulars here.
He knows
we
what
do
to
have
do.
Regulars.
I'm the first time.
Things are happening.
Where are we going?
Long-time watcher, first-time spinner.
School days.
School days.
Strange point in my life. I'm at a crazy boarding school for about a year and a half. At that point, my mom buys a farm in Southside, Virginia, yanks me out of the boarding school, puts me in this school where suddenly I'm a minority. It's 70% black, 30% white, and everybody who's white is already engaged to be married. So what am I going to do? I end up in a study hall with Rex and Darlene. And Rex and Darlene are madly in love with each other. They're going to get married. And I'm listening to this, and they're explaining this theory about how they can get out of high school a year early. All they have to do is take these classes and go to summer school. And I thought, hey, wait a minute. I can get out of high school a year early. So that's what I did.
Jay Neal,
yes.
That's a great story. Wow, 39 seconds.
39 seconds.
And he graduated high school early. Now I know something about you.
See, there you go. Being a minority, apparently a big motivator for white people. Be like, I got to get the hells out of here.
All right, you guys.
I can't take it.
Coming to this age right now is the one and only Sarah Murphy. You guys can find Sarah over on Twitter at smurf22.
smurf22.
Of course, you can find us at Storyworthy, and why not tweet that you're at the Hollywood Improv?
We're
nice
gonna
to see you.
Everybody, hello! Very fashionable.
Sarah,
she's wearing a black turtleneck.
It's a shame you have no charisma. It's like a light switch.
Oh. Breakup. Oh, it is on breakup, a painful topic.
Breakup. Okay. Well, the first story that comes to mind is when I was in college, the last guy I dated was this guy named Mark. And at the time, I was like, oh, Mark is just so great. We met at this camp for disabled kids. So immediately, I was like, oh, Mark is such a good person. Well, the disabled camp ends, and we go back to college, and all of a sudden, I realize, wow, Mark just loves to drink. I mean, this guy, he was drunk all the time. And I remember, so as our relationship, you know, kind of went on, you know, he'd want to make me breakfast in the morning. And it was just like he'd make eggs, and it was always beer. And then at night, like, everything involved beer or margarita. And I just will never forget. I was like, okay, Mark, we're going to branch out. We're going to go on a walk. And he looked at me, and I kid you not, he did not own a pair of tennis shoes. And he was like, what? You need tennis shoes to go on a walk? Anyway, long story short, he brought beer on the walk. And in that moment, I was like, if you cannot walk without beer, this is ending. And so I remember I had like planned this like in my head so many times. When I set him down to break up with him, I couldn't do it. I just felt so bad.
Finish the story.
And long story short, I decided I had to be, you know, deep and make a memory of it. So I took him to the park to break up with him and told him, this is why we can't date, because you can't drink. You have to stop drinking beer in the park. So I ended it in the park.
Yes.
Sarah Murphy, ladies and gentlemen. Sarah Murphy.
1 minute, 20 seconds.
That's a great story.
Alcohol.
She is a great story.
Not
she's
just
wounded,
for breakfast anymore.
Yes. I'd like the idea. He can walk without shoes, but not without beer. That is a
I actually thought
image.
that was part of the story, and she actually killed the guy in the park.
She has so much charisma, she causes sound effects to happen around her.
You know, when she said that she met this guy working with the disabled, it made me think of you, Barry Katz. You graduated from Boston University with a degree specializing in working with the disabled. And my question is helping comedians like helping the disabled?
Comedians are broken.
They have to be broken. Because why would you get on stage for that kind of ridicule and that kind of rejection night after night if somebody didn't fuck you up?
Yeah, I mean, comedians are mostly broken. You can't find many that haven't had that. I always say, and I remember I interviewed this guy, Larry Moss, who's the greatest acting coach of my generation. He coaches DiCaprio and Helen Hunt and Hilary Swank. And he has this thing that he says, every artist has a hole that's been blown through them, and their art is what they use to fill the hole.
Yeah.
And so when they have a great show or a great performance, the hole is filled, but then the next day the hole is open again. It's like a fix of heroin. And he always says, if you want to be a great artist or great in any profession you have, that you have to figure out how to fill the hole without the art. And if you can do that, you're going to be successful for the rest of your life.
I'm upset.
What? No, no, no. Christine, we're filling your hole right now.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. We're also filling my hole.
That's disgusting.
It's getting worse, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, you guys, coming to the stage right now.
My hole is so full.
Is the one and only Nucha Gideon.
Come on, pizza.
Nucha Gideon, ladies and gentlemen. She's an amazing actress.
Hey, she's doing an Italian titty wave.
I hope this isn't in video.
Titty wave.
Her boobs just did the wave.
All right, you guys, let's let her hear it. Here we go. Spin that wheel.
Nooch. What do you mean? What do you mean? Oh, me, Nooch. You didn't.
All the way around. That's good. All the way around.
Oh, my hole is almost full.
You know, I know how to spin.
That's right.
That's right.
And you won the Price is Right, didn't you?
I won a tractor.
A tractor. She.
Pets, ladies and gentlemen.
Pets. I had a dog that got arrested on Revere Beach in Boston, Mass. My father never took the dog out for a friggin' walk. The dog decides to go to the with the dog next door, and they walk from East Boston all the way up to Revere Beach. None of us in the family ever got arrested but the dog. The MDC police picked them up. The two dogs, and it cost my father $40 to get the dogs out of the slammer.
Perfect story, Nucci. 23 seconds. Way to go. Awesome.
For those of you who don't know about Revere Beach, literally you're swimming and like a tuna fish sandwich will be beside you. It's like there's all sorts of stuff in the water.
Oh, gosh, this is exciting. This I didn't exciting. Know she was even here. Right
yes.
now, coming to the stage,
celebrity
the one and only
guest.
Jackie Cation.
Jackie.
All right, Jackie.
Yes. I saw you. Hello, Jackie. It will be weird. Oh, that went. Yes.
Did you just say that out
yeah,
loud?
Yeah, Jackie
oh,
just
wow.
said out loud, how weird will it be if I get virginity? You want to know why she said that, Christine?
No, we're going to find out.
Let's not.
Oh,
missed it.
Oh, missed it.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, Mom. Oh, wow. Oh, this is going to be.
I know this. Mom. Hi, I have two dead moms, you guys. I didn't kill either of them. When I was 7, my mother, I'm from Milwaukee, she was killed on a Harley Davidson, so we were proud. Because she could have been killed on a Kawasaki, you guys. Imagine the neighbors. Yeah. So my second mother, my stepmother of 35 years, died 3 years ago. And I went home for the funeral. My father purposefully not invited to the funeral. I take him to lunch. And my father says, you know, I'm going to die one day before the funeral. And I said, wow, Dad, nice work making it about you almost immediately. Thanks a lot.
Jackie Cation, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God. Should we reveal the secret truth?
What were you going to say, Hannes? You're saying that Jackie Cation,
well, no.
if she landed on virginity.
We have the light.
Okay, go ahead.
Jackie, I've actually known Jackie forever. We went to college together. We started at the same club owned by Bill Kinnison, Sam Kinnison's brother. And anyhow, if Jackie were to name the person that took her virginity, he might be in this room. That's all I'm saying.
Barry Katz.
Barry Katz, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, you guys, coming to the stage right now, Corrine Missmacher.
Corrine Missmacher.
This is the last storyteller tonight. You can find her at Corey Mest, C-O-R-I-M-E-S-T, on Twitter. And let's let her hear it. Here we go, you guys.
Woohoo!
Spin that wheel! I think this is the last storyteller.
Like Marilyn from the Munsters compared to all of us here. This is incredible.
Passport.
All right. So, I went to London in my first, I studied abroad in London junior year, and my friend and I are going to go to Paris for the weekend. And so we go to Paris, we have everything mapped out, we're there, we get to this really nice hostel, and things are going really, really well. And then it's time to leave Paris, and we get to customs, we're taking the train, we get to customs, and there's this guy there, and he looks at us and goes, I cannot let you through. And we were like, oh my gosh, what? Why? Like, here are our passports. And he goes, you are students here. And I don't know why he had a Russian accent. He just did. And we were like, no, well, like, we're not students. We're visiting, but we're studying abroad in London. He goes, where are your visas? And literally, this went on for a good 30 minutes. This man would not let us in because we didn't have any, we didn't have our visas. And I looked at him dead in the eyes and I went, "You will let me out of this godforsaken country or I will find your family and you will never see them again." And he let us through.
Threatening the border guards, ladies and gentlemen.
The power of no.
All right, the winner of Shotgun Storyworthy is the one and only. Who's the winner?
Well, you know, sadly, I have a three-way tie.
No, they got to split this $50.
I know.
Well, what are we going to do? Make them fight it out?
Yeah, they'll go to the bar and they'll spend it and they'll tip the bartender.
All right, go ahead. Let's hear the names.
Well, first of all, I want to say Jackie Cation. I know what's odd. You know what's odd about being a manager. Sometimes you run into comedians. And because you don't represent them or you don't come up to them often, sometimes you think in the back of your mind that maybe they don't think that you think they're funny or you don't think that they're great or you don't think that they have a viable career. But Jackie Cation, I just want to say, and you should all know and give a round of applause, she's an amazing comedian.
Yes.
And deserves that respect. And ordinarily, Jackie, you would... I would put you at the top here, but I can't do that, so you're disqualified.
Oh, yes.
So my three-way tie is between Sarah.
Murphy.
Noosh. And Kareem.
All right. Three lovely ladies.
So they're going to have to go up there. They're going to spend about $12.50 apiece and tip the bartender the rest.
Hey, I have to tell you guys, sometimes I am truly shocked by when I ask somebody to come on the show and then they do. Like, I had Sugar Ray Leonard on the show. So sometimes it happens. And Barry Katz, he came. So ladies and gentlemen, one more time for Barry Katz.
Barry Katz.
He came.
All right.
I want to thank Dustin Diamond for canceling.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. There's another show coming into the lab. Feel free to stick around for that. But I want to thank everybody here at the Improv Lab, including Dax Jordan. Thanks, Dax.
Dax.
Thank you, Antonio. Thank you to our bartender tonight. Make sure you tip everybody well. I also want to thank everybody at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen. And of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Never heard of him, the son of a bitch.
I'd also like to thank our storyteller tonight, the one and only Barry Katz. One more time.
Katz.
Thank you so much. It was an honor.
And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, make it a story-worthy week, guys. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.